Elliot Friedman joins me from 32 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada. And Elliot, you're going to talk to Kelly McCrimmon here at the top of hour two. And you know, now that the trade has come and gone and the saga, at least for now, has come to an end, next stop is surgery for Jack Eichel, and it's the artificial disc replacement, as we all know. You've had a little while to think about it, a good night's sleep on it, I'm assuming last night specifically. What just happened? I'm going to move away from Eichel here, but when you sort of put all of this in context, what just happened, and does anything change in the NHL because of it? And I'm looking at the CBA and players being more in charge of their medical care, obviously.
Well, first of all, I think there's two questions that you should ask him. Number one, is the worst thing about making a big trade are all the interviews that you have to do after it. That's number one. And,
yes.
And number two, is it true, as one Western Hockey League general manager said, making trades with him is hell? I think you have to ask those two questions.
Okay, I'll see if I can get those Elliot Friedman specials in there. But
and he said that was out of respect. Like, you know that you're, when you entered trade talks with Kelly McCrimmon,
yeah,
you're going into the ringer. Like, you really are.
But here's the thing about dealing with Kelly McCrimmon. When you deal with the Vegas Golden Knights, you're not just dealing with Kelly McCrimmon. You're also dealing with George McPhee. And when you want to talk about
another
someone
tough guy
who, like, well, how many agents have you talked to who are like, ugh, I got a negotiation coming up with George. This is not going to be easy. Like, these guys don't make it easy on anybody.
No, and actually, when McPhee was the GM of the Capitals, he was one of the guys, like, for example, no agents in the room, or he didn't even really want them in the building. So, you know, so you know what you're getting into when the time comes there. You know, about the CBA thing, you know, it's one of the things I did talk about with Eichel. And, you know, look, like the next CBA negotiation's a while down the road. This one's still got 5 years left in it, potentially. And you know, obviously the economic issues are always the first thing. But I do think this is going to be a huge issue, is what is going to happen with the players and control over the situation. Look, like, I don't think anyone ever thought this was going to happen. The CBA was written to give teams the final say. But if you look at superstar players, you know, Sidney Crosby did some very different treatments for his concussion and neck issues, but the Penguins didn't stand in the way. You know, I think I've told the story before, but we did a piece on Hockey Night in Canada when it was still on CBC about the machine that Crosby visited in Atlanta, and a chiropractor ran it. And there were people that I remember the night before I went on the National, and there were people who didn't want me to talk about it on the National, because they're like, is this a crackpot? But, you know, Crosby wanted to do it, and the Penguins said, okay, if this is how you feel, we're going to let you do it. Connor McDavid with the Oilers, from his big knee injury a couple of years ago, there was a lot of debate over whether or not the path he took was the right path. But at the end, the Oilers just said, look, like, this is Connor McDavid, and we're going to let him do it. And this is a case where it was Jack Eichel, who was the franchise player for the Sabres, and they didn't want him to do it. And I don't know if anybody ever thought we would get to this point. But there's no question, Jeff, that this is going to be a CBA issue when the time comes, and a very, very big one.
Is the follow-up to that is, because I agree with you, and a lot of players were watching with great interest, and Robin Leonard quite famously spoke out about it, now, of course, reunited with Jack Eichel in Vegas. But a lot of players watched this with interest, with the feeling that, okay, right now it's someone else, but one day this might be me. And that's going to be a conversation now until, to your point, the next CBA. But the one thing that I do wonder about now is, you know, artificial disc replacement was considered by some to be controversial. As we all know, it's not something the Buffalo Sabres were too thrilled about. Certainly not. They didn't want one of their athletes to be the first in the NHL to try this. Here's what I wonder about. Jack Eichel will probably have this surgery next week. And fingers crossed, it is successful. He has a speedy recovery. He's healthy. He feels better. He joins the Vegas Golden Knights, and he never has a neck issue again. Let's assume that all happens. Is ADR now, artificial disc replacement, no longer in the no-fly zone for all 32 NHL teams?
I think it's too soon to say. You know, Jack Eichel, and what's one of the questions I asked him was, you know, you're the first. A lot of people wouldn't be comfortable to be the first. A lot of teams wouldn't be comfortable to be the first. You know, Jack Eichel and the Vegas Golden Knights, they're on the edge of the cliff jumping into the water together, because he's taking the chance and they're taking the chance. And I really liked his answer to it, because he said, it's not like I'm just fooling around and guessing. He said, I've done my research. I've put the effort into it. You know, that is one of the things I heard, that he would go see the specialist and he would ask questions, and the specialist would say, you've done your work. And, you know, I think that's why he was as angry as he was, is because it wasn't like, you know, initially, and I didn't know this until he said it yesterday, you know, he was given three choices.
We have to get Elliot a new app to do radio hits, because whenever he gets a call, as we've pointed out before, okay, it kicks him off the line. Oh, yeah, we got you back.
I'm back. Yeah. So it's
three choices. Three choices.
Three choices. One was conservative treatment, and one was the spinal fusion, and one was the disc replacement. And he said, you know what, at the beginning, I'm going to do the conservative treatment. You know, I knew that he and the Sabres had agreed on that at the beginning, but I didn't know it was something. As a matter of fact, initially I heard it was something the Sabres wanted that he didn't, but he corrected the record. And, you know, I just think that this is a guy who did the work. And if he's going to do the work, I don't have any problem with someone to making that choice. Look, again, Jeff, I say this a million times, I only judge someone else the way I would judge myself. And if I was in Eichel's shoes, I would have felt the exact same way.
Absolutely. I think a lot of us would as well. To the NHL last night, and a couple of things here. Tough one for the Ottawa Senators. They're on a little bit of a skid here. Losers of six of their last seven. Brady Tkachuk, the lone goal in a 5-1 loss against Vegas. Jonathan Marchessault with a pair. Robin Leonard with 38 saves. But the story coming out of Ottawa today is a good news story, and that's Brady Tkachuk named team captain. This was going to happen provided he signed a contract extension. How much do you think this was?
One.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, short term one that's off the table. But how much do you think this was, if any, part of the negotiation? And the reason that I bring it up is when we spoke to his brother Matthew in Chicago at the Players Tour, the one thing that he dropped casually when he's running down the list of, you know, the list of qualities that Brady Tkachuk has, he slipped in there, oh, he's a captain, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think that Matthew Tkachuk does things frivolously. I think that is deliberate. Was this part of the negotiation? Do you know?
I would expect, yes, that it came up at times. Absolutely. Well, look, like when the reports come out, like, I can't remember everything, but didn't Melnyk say at one point that it had to be a long-term deal for that to occur?
For that to occur, yeah.
So, I mean, right there is everything you need to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that is, absolutely it came up. Absolutely it was a conversation. I'm just curious to know why they decided to wait. Like, why didn't they? I guess they felt they had to get him back in and reset or whatever. But yes, as you said, it was a good announcement for a day after that result. Although I have a feeling that, you know, the 1976 Soviet team wasn't beating Vegas last night. They were so wired up to play that game after the trade.
They came out flying last night in that game. Like, yeah. Right from the hop. Like guys, Eichel's not coming for a few months. Like, let's all calm down here. Eichel's not coming for a few, but they were exceptional last night. as were the Islanders. And well, a quick note on the Islanders, and then I want to dovetail it into Montreal. And the good news around Montreal is Carey Price is on the horizon. Carey Price is coming back. He'll rejoin his family.
Well, we'll see. Like, what, you know, that's the most important thing. He's coming back to rejoin his family, but it doesn't necessarily mean he's on the horizon of the Canadiens.
Right. For the Islanders, though, last night, this road trip continues. Although it's not really a road trip. Like, they're spending a lot of time at home, and there's, you know, quick games, you know, around home. So it's not as if they're on a 13-game West Coast trip and, you know, they're not seeing their pillows for weeks on end. But 6-2 is the final score. Brock Nelson with 4 goals. Ilya Sorokin, 36 saves. 6-game point streak for the Islanders. They had a little bit of a stumble out of the gate. I know that they weren't too thrilled when they looked at the schedule, but what are you going to do? You're waiting for the UBS Arena to get ready. How do you see the Islanders right now? Because yesterday, and I know it was against the struggling Montreal team, they just look clinical. And if you haven't seen, folks, if you haven't seen Oliver Wahlstrom shoot a puck, you might want to go out of your way to see Oliver Wahlstrom shoot a puck.
Yeah, one of my friends who's an Islanders fan was pretty excited about Wahlstrom last night. He was sent me some happy texts about, this guy's a real player. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement there. You know, like, I think the Islanders are going to be fine. I just think they know what they're there to do, and they know how to play. And, you know, they're really, like, that's a pro team in the sense that every night they know how to attack a game. And if you're not ready to play them, you're going to get embarrassed. Or if you have a bad night, you're going to get embarrassed. And last night, Montreal got embarrassed. Now, I was driving home from Buffalo, and I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of it. But I saw the score, and I was like, oh, my goodness.
And they were. It's never a good thing when you get booed off the ice in Montreal.
Yeah, you know, it's – I think the Canadiens are going to have, like, look, we talked about it a couple weeks ago that you're kind of getting into, okay, are we punting this season talk? And I know it's a really tough thing to say. Like the thing about Price is, as you said, he's coming back to rejoin his family, but, you know, like, look, I don't like to wade into this stuff too much because it's about him and his family, but I think the one thing I wonder is it really a good idea for him to rush back to rejoin the Canadiens? Now, maybe that's what he and his family decide to do. And if that's the case, then, you know, hey, that's your decision. I completely respect it. But I've also got to think that maybe people are sitting here saying maybe he's just got to go back and reconnect with his family and spend some time with them. I never assume in this kind of a situation, it's 30 days and then, all right, day one, you're back on the ice with the Montreal Canadiens. We don't know that until we get some clarity. But I, you know, like, it doesn't panic me that Caulfield was sent to Laval. Sometimes that happens. You know, now, you know, it's just that some of their guys really seem to be regressing. You know, it's obvious they're not thrilled with the way Romanov is playing right now. That's what I'm looking at. If I'm the Canadiens, you know, these guys are good players. They're being asked to do a little bit more than they've been asked to do in the past. And you've got to make sure there's still 72 more games of this, right? Like, how do you prevent them from getting totally shell-shocked? How do you make sure that this season, like, I do think you can punt on the year, go for a draft pick, and then try and come back. But how do you prevent this from just dragging on and hurting the growth and the mentality of your players?
So I was thinking about exactly what you're talking about when I saw the Dom Ducharme press conference afterwards, and where a lot of coaches, after getting beaten like that at home and the fans are booing and it's just a bad scene, they would be angry, seething at the presser. And Ducharme came out, and I'll paraphrase what he said: I don't want to do anything that ends up on YouTube for the rest of my life.
That's smart.
I'm not going to put on the show. He was very mellow, very, you know, deliberate, but very calm through the presser yesterday. I mean, I would imagine he's a prideful guy. Like, his team just got destroyed by the Islanders, and it was clinical. But he was chill. about the whole thing? Is that just a reflection in your estimation or in your head of this team is fragile right now, I don't need to throw more logs on the fire?
Absolutely. And if I was in his shoes, I would probably do the same thing up to a point. You know, for example, if you lose five games in a row like that, you can't respond that way. But I think there's nights where you have to look at it and say, I cannot pour gasoline on the fire. And that was a night last night where you can't pour gasoline on the fire. And it's, you know, it's like the best coaches. Like I do remember, for example, both Glenn Healy and Kelly Rudy, they loved the late Al Arbour. And they said that he was the hardest on them when they were playing great. Because yeah. That was when he could put the most pressure on them. But there were times that, you know, they said, oh God, we stunk last night, he's going to kill us today. And he would. But when they were playing really well, that's when he would really grind them and get on them. And I think you have, especially now, and like we talked about this last week with Keefe. So Keefe is frustrated by that loss about San Jose, and he kind of gives it to them a bit. And the next night they get embarrassed in Pittsburgh and he goes easy. And people are like, well, how can you go easy after that game? Because you can't do that all the time, especially not in Toronto and Montreal. You can't do that.
Seattle beats Buffalo yesterday 5-2. Of particular note here, Jordan Eberle with the first ever hat trick in Seattle Kraken history.
Yeah.
One of the funniest moments that I think you and I had when we were in Chicago for the players' interviews was when we were talking to Jordan Eberle about game one for him. And it's hockey night in Canada, and it's the Oilers and the Calgary Flames. And we're, you know, reminiscing about, you know, the toe drag goal and spinning around highlight and all that. And he says, yeah, it's amazing the chances you take when you're a kid. You know, I'm a veteran now. I probably just would have shot at far pad for the rebound. I'm just like, it's a funny sort of, you know, contrast in what you do when you're a kid versus, you know, how you learn how to play like a pro now. And it's a lot more exciting when you're younger. You have a thought on Seattle last night and a thought on Jordan Eberle, who's really had one of the more interesting careers that we've seen going back some 10 years.
Well, first of all, I was watching this. We were doing this while we were taping the podcast. And we were doing the podcast last night, and we were watching that game when Eberle scored the hat trick goal. And I don't know who produces the Seattle TV broadcast. That was the feed I happened to be watching at the time. And they made sure they showed like a super slow-mo of Dahlin toe picking after the empty netter. And I was like, oh, that's going to be everywhere. Yeah, that's when it's going to be everywhere. Yeah. And, you know, like, I just think that Eberle, you know, Eberle's the perfect guy for that situation. He's got a good attitude. He understands what it's like to be at the top, and he understands what it's like to be going to being ground down. Because he's certainly gone through that at different points in his career. I think when you're in an expansion situation, everybody kind of feels like the group of rejects. He's got a good enough sense of humor and a good enough perspective on being an NHLer that he can handle all that kind of thing. You know, Seattle, like, they play hard. You know, I think it's pretty obvious that they're good enough to compete. Are they good enough to win? I think that's the big question. But you know when you play them that they're going to have a certain structure and they're going to make you work to beat them. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of working hard, despite the losing effort, 4-3 in overtime to the Dallas Stars, the Calgary Flames just keep on gobbling up points as their impressive start
Bank your
continues.
Points.
Bank your Put points early, bank. Man. It pays off later. Jamie Benn with the OT. Goal past Jacob Markstrom, Miro Heiskanen with 3 points in this one. Where are you at right now on the, I don't think we've talked much about this. Where are you at on the Calgary Flames right now? Like a really impressive October. Like their October was tremendous. You always talk about get a good start. They got a good start. Where are you at with Calgary right now? And how much did the name Matthew Tkachuk getting out there, whether it was right or wrong, affect this team, if at all?
Well, I think they're mad about it. And you know, so I'm reading Eric Francis' story last night. you know, normally I don't read Eric's stories, but I read this one. And, you know, and like all you had to do was read Eric's story, because Eric's really plugged into what's going on there. Yeah. And I'm reading what he's saying, and I'm like, ooh, like there's hard feelings here. Because anytime like someone puts into a story that it's clear that, you know, the Kevin Weeks and Kevin Adams were teammates, so that's what the Flames are thinking. That's because someone is making sure that everybody knows that that's what the Flames are thinking and where they blame for that story getting out. Hmm. And, you know, as a reporter, when I see that, it's like, I know, like, I don't like it. Like I taped something with Andrew Peters and Craig Brevet today. And Andrew Peters is like, do you want to know where I got the information? I said, no, and don't do that. And he said, why? And I go, because people get into trouble for that. Like I was telling him some stories off air about places where like some of my sources have been threatened, or I've been threatened about, I'm going to find out who your guy is or your person is. And you know, like, so when a team puts that out there, like as a reporter, that's like, I don't even like reporting that stuff. But so that says to me how mad Calgary is. Like, they are steaming about that one. And the thing about Tkachuk is, and you talked about our interview from the player tour, he is like he is got a lot of pride. He's not afraid to put himself out there. But I think when you hear that about yourself, even if they convince you that it's not true, it definitely creates the doubt. And the team, and I'm sure his teammates are like, okay, what's going on here? And, you know, I thought they played pretty hard last night, and I agree with you. They did a good job of getting that point. But I guarantee you that Calgary's aggressive response is they know that's a hand grenade into their room, potentially. And that's what they're mad about. Mm-hmm.
Real quick follow-up on the Flames, and he turned out to be the star of our podcast that just got released here a couple of hours ago, and that's Oliver Shillington, who like, we've seen players take leaps before from one season to the next.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happened to Oliver Shillington, but all of a sudden he's taken like not hasn't just sort of nudged his career forward. It's like a giant leap, like by every, you know, by any metric, boxcar or otherwise, this guy's been phenomenal for the Calgary Flames so far.
And the thing I like about it the most is that, you know, you and Sam are the draft guys. You know this stuff better than I do.
He was highly thought of because of the feet. The feet are so quick.
But wasn't there a point a year before he was drafted where they were talking about like he would be the number two pick behind McDavid? That's correct. That's right.
There was some, and then Eichel emerged. But there was talk. It was a couple of years out, as everyone sort of projects, not the 1 year, but the 2 years out. Shillington's name was absolutely there 2 years out of the Fort Lauderdale draft.
So one of the stories I always remember reading, and now I know I'm old. I'm going back 30 years. Is the Todd Marinovich story in Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that, Todd Marinovich was a quarterback who later played in the Canadian Football League, and his father's name was Marv, bred him to be a quarterback. Like, never touched a Coke, never touched McDonald's. And that was some of the small stuff in the story. Like, basically, he was like almost like a human lab experiment to be a quarterback. And it didn't work that way. And sadly, Marinovich Todd had a lot of issues after because of all the pressure he felt. So whenever I read about people who at a young age are projected great things and maybe it doesn't work out, I always think about that, like how hard it must be to have that pressure on you as a teenager and it may not go that way. But so when I watch Shillington this year and the way he's playing, I'm really happy to see that. And it's clear that Sutter believes in him. So I just like to see that for Shillington as a person, because I think it's a great thing to see. And, you know, like we said, I I keep my wife away from his Instagram account.
It is quite the thing. It is quite the scene. Chillington Instagram account.
Put it this way, I am not in the same class. I am definitely willing to admit.
No, I know. I feel same. Before we let you go, how many texts or tweets did you send while I was talking this past 20, 25 minutes?
No, you know what? I can't touch my phone because the moment I touch it,
that's
it goes
right.
off.
So I've got you.
Believe me, it's torture. But right. I get a bunch coming in, so that's what you're hearing.
All right, very good. No, I was just curious. It's become our inside joke that whenever I start talking, Elliot starts tweeting.
You did that last night in the podcast.
But it was John Bartlett's initiative, and I had to get that out.
But still, you weren't doing the most important thing, which was listening to me.
Paying attention to you, just listening with quiet awe, as we all do, Elliot. All right, we'll see you on Hockey Night tomorrow. Thanks, Reach.
All right, take care, man.